Welcome to Fly Cool Shit, the show where Jeff Petro and Mark Pollard talk about aerobatics, unique airplanes, aviation news, and so much more. Hey, pilot, you're clear to enter the box. Smoke on.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Fly Cool Shit, powered by Lyft Aviation. I'm Mark, and it's just me tonight. Schedules are getting crazy, guys. I'm so sorry. It's been this long since a podcast episode has been released. I'm literally sitting in my car while my daughter's at soccer practice, and I thought I'd just put one out. We were going to try to record together tonight, Jeff and I, and schedules are just, they're not aligning. And so rather than leave you guys without anything, you're going to get half of Fly Cool Shit tonight. Not much going on, although I guess a lot's going on. Sun and Fun commenced and completed earlier in the week, kind of the big, we're basically in it now. I'm seeing all of Rob Holland's posts back in the air show season, in the thick of it. Sun and Fun being one of the bigger air shows of the year, but kind of front loaded, right? Gets the country kicked off in terms of the air show season. We got a couple contests coming up. One contest starts tomorrow. I'm recording this on Thursday, the 10th. You're going to hear this on the 11th. Borrego, Hammerhead Roundup starts tomorrow. Practice was today. I looked at the pre-registered pilots for that. There wasn't very many. It was like 9. So not a whole lot of exciting things to talk about in terms of who's there. I hope it's well attended. I've talked about this on prior episodes, but are you guys getting the vibe that just things are kind of chilled out or cooling off a little bit? Is it just me? Am I in a vacuum? It just seems like for all the social media posts about aerobatics and the IAC, that are occurring, which there's a lot, it seems to be like another side has kind of cooled down, right? Are people transitioning to Instagram or other social media avenues? I don't know. But it seems like a contest buzz hasn't been as, as public as they have maybe in a few years past. I don't know. So I hope the Hammerhead Roundup is well attended. But like I said, total pre-registrations for the contest were 9. Few in intermediate, few in sportsmen, 1 volunteer only, 1 glider, got a glider, and 1 advanced. So I'm sure there's going to be more. I saw Eric Moore post on social media. He didn't pre-register, but he flew down. I'm assuming he had the airplane in St. George, the 330, and made it down to Borrego. I'm guessing competing in Unlimited, but I don't know. His posts have been really fun to watch. Jeff has made mention a few times that the 330 SC really is kind of like a cheat code when it comes to flying. It just makes everything just look good and comes easy, relatively speaking, right? Obviously, flying in the upper categories, or flying any aerobatics for that matter, is challenging. It's difficult, but the SC makes it look a little bit easier. I would say that watching Eric's videos, he's getting very comfortable very quick, which is really fun to watch. So hopefully he does well this weekend. I should shoot him a text and see if he's competing in Unlimited or Advanced or not. So we have that going on. What do you guys think? Are exciting start to the year? Quiet start to the year, subdued start to the year. We're just getting into the contest season with the Hammerhead, and then we have Sebring coming up at the end of the month. Pretty typical. So everybody's gearing up for that. Been really appreciating all of the advance team posts. So I'm sure Monique is behind that. Thank you for posting that. Just seems quiet. The Canadians are quiet except for Luke Penner. you know, that guy. What a Canadian animal. Like a moose. He's just like a, I don't know, like a moose on Adderall or something. He's just an animal. Really going to be fun to watch him this year. We've already talked about that. You know, kind of see who comes out of the, not out of the woodwork, but, you know, out of hibernation. I think, you know, if you live in Florida, if you live in the, you know, Southeast, you didn't go to sleep, right? But, for, and California, for the Southwest, region as well, you know, not much of a season off this year, which has been great. Today it was like 80 degrees and sunny. It's been pretty much high 70s all week. It's been pretty sweet. So, you know, you don't get much downtime. I should be curious, you know, another person I've been watching a lot is Alon. Freaking love you, dude. Love your videos, man. You posted one today. You're on freaking rails, dude. Is it a problem? You know, what is it like? You know, Jeff gets forced to do, you know, several months off, right? Which is good mentally. It's good physically for the pilot. I would think it'd be really good for the airplane, you know, really tear it down. You know, Mikey G at the end of the air show season, you know, just tears his airplane completely down. I know most air show pilots do. But to get it kind of torn down, get it really looked at, and where you don't have this pressure of feeling like you should be in the air, putting reps in, be curious. You know, my Southeast peeps, clue me in on that, please. I'd be really curious if you guys feel the added pressure, if, you know, the folks out there feel it. Like, do you feel guilty not being in the air? Do you feel guilty putting the plane down for a couple months or a month to do just, you know, not just an annual, but to really look the airplane over, really kind of take a reset, take a pause? I'd be really curious. You know, we get that by default to an extent out in California, but you can effectively fly year round here. You might have a week, you might have 2 weeks where you're on the ground, but you can get it. You can get a flight in here and there, especially, you know, especially like, you know, just going up and throwing the airplane around for 15 minutes. You could easily squeeze that in, without much issue, right? What was the takeaway from Sun and Fun for all of you that went? Looked really fun. I saw a lot of pictures. I had to laugh at Bo's posting. I forgot what they said, but it was something to the effect of, you know, that they're basically giving influencers, you know, A30s, you know, like, oh, they're, you know, our sponsored influencers are gonna have Bose products at Sun and Fun. It's like, okay, is that still a thing? I really thought that died down last year. It was way different. All the flashes in the pan in terms of either, you know, those that were selling the attractive side of influencing when it comes to aviation. You know, we saw a few, you know, like Trent Palmer, who's not, I wouldn't put him in any category in terms of like doing it to be an influencer. Right. But you know, you see, a few get in real trouble, right? Who's the other guy that freaking jumped out of his airplane and, had, I think he spent a little time in prison, for falsifying a bailout, right? For the clicks, for the views. You see that kind of, that stuff has kind of died down a little bit. And then, you know, the female influencer side, I feel like really died down, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's in full effect. I just don't pay attention to it. I'm really curious to see if it's me or if there's something there. But, back to the air, you know, just kind of getting back to like, okay, people enjoying air shows and not having to, post how many other influencers they take pictures with. It's like circle jerk fest of influencers has always been super weird. And it's hard, right? It's hard running a podcast, owning a podcast, starting a podcast with that idea. Cause again, I don't like that world, and yet somehow I'm in that world. Jeff is in that world. We're in that world. It's weird. Oh my gosh. Okay. Before we get into probably my favorite thing about Sun and Fun, I wanted to talk about Lyft's new, sponsored pilot, and the helmet that they did for him. Cause that thing is pretty freaking sick. Aaron Fitzgerald, we knew he was, coming on board. I think we talked about that a few podcasts ago, but, the helmet that they did in the Red Bull livery looks really freaking good. I think I posted that on the Aerobatic Pilots page, but if you haven't seen it, head over to the Lyft Aviation Facebook page and their Instagram for that matter. All their socials have it, but, it's just really, really well done. Beautiful helmet. Absolutely beautiful helmet. Okay. So tied for that, I might give the slight edge here to, kind of the, what stole the show for me. And I think probably for a lot of people. And I didn't even go to the show, but it was something that stole the show for me from afar was the Aura Integral R unveiling. It's finally here. It's a real thing. They delivered their first aircraft. I gotta be honest. I want to get into the specs a little bit about it, and we'll talk about price here in just a second. This is an airplane I really want to see in person. I think the most surprising element of this airplane was that livery matters, paint scheme matters, and the delivery aircraft paint scheme looks so good. I can really see some fun paint schemes on this airplane. What a cool airplane, right? To have a two-seat, side-by-side, 200 horsepower, aerobatic airplane. That looks good. Great for training. Tell you what. I would not kick one of those out of bed, so to speak. I think in terms of, you know, I don't know how it flies. I did talk to a few of the folks at Aura. They reached out to see if we were going to be at Sun and Fun. But we're going to get, Mikey G is going to come back on, at some point to talk about it. And maybe even get one of the guys from Aura to talk about it as well. But, I don't know how it flies, and I'm sure, you know, anybody that's trying to sell the airplane is going to say it flies great, right? Cause that's what they do and that's what they should do. But I think there's something there. I think at this point, in terms of, aeronautical design, aircraft design, you don't make a bad flying airplane. Are there going to be some, maybe, I don't even say drawbacks, but just, you know, things where maybe the airplane doesn't shine like something else. Sure. There's always going to be, something there, right? Compromise. That's a better way to put it. There's going to be some compromises. It's a 200 horsepower airplane, right? But, in terms of, boy, all but making the Super Decathlon and Extreme Decathlon irrelevant, I think it's that. I think even an S2C now, my guess is that would probably have similar performance. It's composite. It's probably heavier, but maybe not much. Granted, it's 200 versus 260, but we'll get into the G limitations here in a second, but 490 grand is the proposed price tag. That's pretty decent. It's crazy. It's freaking crazy. Who remembers when, Super Decathlons were less than 300 grand? Or, I remember building a Pitts, dreaming about an S2C and building it on the website for, I think, 275 back in the day when they came out. Maybe it was 290, but I think that was less than three as well. When looking at it now, they're over four, almost five, which is insane. And so we're in that realm, right? We're in that market now, or in that time where, God, I don't even get me started on the tariffs and how they're going to affect an aircraft like that. But, an NG is 700 probably, a GB1 is 700 probably. MXS, six something. I would imagine a Super Decathlon has got to be in the fours. So, and I would take a Super Decathlon and, and put it in that same category of kind of jack of all trades, master of none, right? That's very much going to be the integral R. It's not going to master anything. But if you owned one airplane for a school, I don't know if they come IFR certified, but you could certainly do private. You could do upset and spin recovery and do it well. You know, you could do full spin series for pilots that go through a program. And then aerobatic training. I think that's really, really cool. It's a great, be a great sightseeing aircraft with the bubble canopy. So much easier. I've always found, I'm sure a lot of the instructors out there can relate to this too. I always find tandem seat airplanes where the PIC is in the back, I find that troublesome to give somebody a discovery flight in. I've done it a lot. And I look back and I'm like, it's pretty dumb to put somebody who's never flown an airplane in the front seat of a Citabria or a Super Decathlon. And you just kind of talk them through stuff because you can't reach everything. So I find that that's probably pretty dumb. In fact, I'm sure there's some people out there listening. They're like, you did what? But, you know, in a 152, I did that all the time in a 152 aerobat because I could reach over and grab the starter if I needed to. Right, everything's right there. So I really like side-by-side for a lot of reasons. Instruction being huge. I mean, it's not a game changer. It's not the first airplane that we've seen like this. But I think it's a much better suited airplane for that environment than a tandem. You know, even in the extra and even in the pits, I wanted to make sure somebody was comfortable in the front seat before I moved him into the back seat. And that's, I think, fair, right? That's not crazy. But this makes it a little bit easier. You can really put somebody in the left seat right away. You don't have to put them in the right seat. Everything's right there. It is really truly full dual control when everything's right in front of you. I love the looks of the Integral R. I really do. I think it's a really pretty airplane. Obviously, Cap heritage, you know, Cap's kissing cousin, right? That tail is just so distinctive. It's so pretty. It's got such a good stance, that high gear. I just think looks wise, I'm gonna even say this. This is gonna ruffle some feathers. I'm gonna say it's the nicest designed aerobatic airplane to come out. I mean, I think it's nicer looking than the NG. I think it's nicer looking than the GB1. I think it's nicer looking than, I'll stop there just because I'm in the 2-place certified space, right? But I think it's a great looking airplane, and I think you can get really creative with some of the liveries that you can put on that thing. Aura had very. I don't think their paint jobs were very good. I don't think their paint jobs sold the airplane very well. Just my opinion. But I think the delivery airplane, if everybody goes onto their social media and check out the airplane they delivered, a really pretty airplane. And I think you're going to see some really, really sick paint jobs. I'm sure Mirko has probably already worked on some, already designed some, already sold some. And then we'll see it. I hope so anyway. 490 for that airplane, I think, is probably where it needs to land. I think it's crazy that we're in a space where we're starting to approach closer to the $1 million mark for a 2-seat unlimited airplane than being farther away from a million, you know. And the tariffs are going to be, they're going to wreak havoc. You know, they're going to wreak havoc. It's not something we've talked about, you know, not to get political on the podcast, and I won't, but the tariffs are going to be really problematic, and I'm not sure if tariff pricing has kind of gone into effect. And I know the tariffs are on, then they're off, then they're on, now they're off again, now they're paused or whatever, what have you. But are we going to see these airplanes go up another $100,000? You know, luckily, most of these airplanes now are composite, right? So steel and aluminum and stuff like that, maybe not highly as affected, but raw materials are going to be problematic. You know, how much is a freaking Thunderbolt going to cost now? You know, how much, I mean, how much is an IO 360 going to cost now? It's kind of scary to think about. But if you're in the market for a new airplane, that's pretty darn cool to be able to look at an airplane like the Integral R. Let's take a look at some of the specs. I did pull it up earlier. Obviously, side by side, which is really cool. I really want to know maybe some of the context of this airplane, because, you know, it's a two, obviously, side by side for all of them. Then there's, you know, basically three different variants here. Okay. There's the R, and then there's the kind of the non R, the Integral, that, you know, non-aerobatic or, you know, utility category, but, you know, they come with a BRS, and I don't know what, anti deflagration, deflagration. Don't know what that is. Fuel tanks, but they have it. I don't know what that is actually. I'll have to look that up. But the load factors. So this is kind of where I was saying, like, okay, not that anybody's buying a new S2C these days, but you're looking at, I'm guessing this is solo. So it says category A2 extended. So I'm sure this is like with a certain fuel load range, or sorry, a certain fuel load capacity. But you got plus and minus 7.5 Gs. So yeah, the energy is going to be a little down because it's 200 horsepower, but you know, does it make up for it in aerodynamics and weight? Cause that's where we're at now. You know, these airplanes all, you know, have a, we all thought, or at least I did, maybe I'm the only one cause I'm an idiot, but I thought glass cockpits would all be, you know, three times as heavy. And it turns out that these older airplanes, you know, you're pulling out, ripping out all the garbage in there and throwing a G3 or a G5 in there, and it's lighter. And so they're shaving weight, and these new composite building techniques, construction techniques are making airplanes lighter. So I don't have, let me see here. We can go through some of the stuff. And I did misspeak. It's 210 horsepower. So at least it checks the high performance ticket off too. And it would check off, I think, technically advanced aircraft, TAA here in the States. I'd have to look that up, but I think it does. Approach speed of 78 knots, nice and slow, 60 knot stall. Let's see here. I'm trying to look at, where's the weight? So MTO is 2216. Okay. That's less than a 172. But let's see what an S2C weighs. This is a fun little exercise while you guys are listening to my typing here. Let's see. All right. So this, you know, the Pitts S2C is actually considerably lighter. Max gross weight is 1,700. So, yeah, that's lighter. No doubt. Okay. So, you know, the performance is not going to quite be there. And I'm sure a Super Decathlon is significantly lighter. Let's see here. Okay, so max gross on the Super D is 1950. And it's been a little bit since I've flown one, but if I remember correctly, with two people in there, that's like two people and you know, half tanks. You're just about there. So that's not much different in weight. I'm actually shocked Super D is heavier than a Pitts. How's that possible? Let me look up that weight again. That sounds light to me. That's right off of Aviat's website. I'll believe it. Yeah, I'll believe it. Okay. But yeah, I'm very excited. I hope sale, I mean, it's a bad time to be entering the market, but hopefully this airplane's here to stay. Hopefully the orders are plentiful. I think this is a great airplane for the flight school market. I think it's going to do well. Whether it does well in the aerobatic market, I just don't know. I don't know what the aerobatic market is right now, because the secondary market for two-place unlimited aerobatic airplanes, like the extra 300L and 330LX, you know, they're still out there, and you can find them, and you can, you know, the entry cost. I think people are looking at the entry cost more than anything now, and you kind of look at the ability to grow into an airplane. That mentality of like climbing up the aircraft capability ranks, I think is waning a little bit, and I think people are just like, you know what, rip the Band-Aid, buy the extra, don't get the fundamentals, but you'll have that airplane for a long time. So I wonder where that puts something like the Integral R. I don't know. But I think it's a great airplane. I think it's a great flight school airplane. I think it's a cool airplane. Like if you're going to go, you know, it's an ecosystem, right? I said this when we talked about it last time, is that, you know, you get all three of these. I think they're going to make an electric version too, but like, you know, you get the tricycle gear airplane in there. You get an electric airplane in there, and then you get the R, and you have kind of a well-rounded flight school for single engine piston airplanes. And it's supported, the parts are similar. So if you're, you know, when you look at, here's the other thing. Textron doesn't make a 152 anymore. They don't support the 162 or manufacture the 162 anymore. So they don't have a two-place airplane. I'm not sure about Piper and the Piper Sport. I don't know what's going on with that. I'm sure that's being made still. But that's kind of a different market, being LSA. But, you know, having a certified two-place normal and utility category airplane that you can fleet a flight school with, you know, you're looking at stuff like the Diamond, right? The Diamond fleet, you know, you can equip an entire school with everything with Diamond. You can DA-20, DA-40, and then 42 and 62, you know, and you cover everything. And they're beautiful airplanes. But I think the Integral R is that for the two-place market. You know, if you're doing a school that you want two-seat certified airplanes, got a common type, common parts, makes supporting them a lot easier. I think it's cool. I'm excited. Are you guys excited to see this airplane out? Kind of excited to see what it's going to do. I think it looks so good. I really like the way it looks. Hard to make a side-by-side airplane look good. That's the biggest problem. The biggest hurdle of this airplane is making the side-by-side look good, right? You're just always going to have a stubby, wide fuselage. Always. But I think they did a nice job with it. The wing looks gorgeous. Nice wide gear. I think it's cool. I'd love to know your thoughts. Send me a message. Let me know. I think it'd be a great airplane. You know, you can knock, you know, like I said, CFI spin endorsements out, spin and offset recovery programs. It's a great airplane for that. Speaking of which, I've been doing a lot of, talked with Eric Moore about this. I know he's just pumping out CFI spin endorsements. I've been doing a bunch of spin training and spin endorsements and getting a lot of inquiries about it. I would say half of the inquiries that I get about CFI spin training, and I'm very clear about spin training. So how I offer it on the website is a singular flight, right? It's a spin. It's an introduction into spin recovery. People are shocked that they can't get a CFI spin endorsement in that amount of time. Now, it's not impossible. It's not. But I really, really caution everybody that messages me, or not caution, but I set the expectation that look, this may not happen in one flight. And I would say 50% are shocked. They're looking for the wham bam, which is unfortunate. nothing I can do about that. You know, they're gonna go where they're gonna go to get what they need done. But I think we're still in that mindset of just pumping out CFIs that don't really know how to spin, teaching students who are gonna get their CFI who don't really know how to spin, and rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. I actually had a long talk. I haven't talked much about this on the podcast, but I'm actually going through the process to try and become a DPE. And that's a whole thing that I could probably talk a whole podcast on. But essentially, you know, it just takes a long time to be, you have your application even looked at. You go in through to an interview process and then a proficiency flight. Then you do an online kind of course. And then you go to Oak City for a week, finish up the course there, come back to your local FISDO, and then basically conduct a check ride while you're being observed. And then you're a DP. We spend a lot of time. It's an interesting, you know, people have different takes on the FAA and, you know, their either comfort level to... Or their, you know, their level of comfort with regard to interacting with the FAA. Some people love the FAA. Some people hate the FAA. You know, some people are scared of the FAA. I still meet CFIs that are terrified of the FAA. But I think once you become a professional pilot and you kind of get out of the flight training world, you realize that they're not the punitive yardstick that some may make them out to be. But I ended up having a really, really nice conversation during my panel interview to kind of move on to the next process in the DPE process about spins. And it's just interesting to hear granted, you know, it's the FISDO, they're local inspectors, they're not Oak City, they're not representing they are representing the FAA, but they're not speaking on behalf of the FAA as a whole. But it's just an interesting back and forth discussion regarding spins. I think that's something that a lot of us as aerobatic pilots take very seriously. You know, any undesired aircraft state or upset, you know, it needs to be mitigated. And part of that is recognition. And, it was just interesting to hear their take on, you know, wanting to see spins back in the curriculum for even a private pilot. The school that I taught at, you had to do an hour of spin training, not for an endorsement or anything like that, but just an hour of spin training before you soloed. And I think, you know, depending on who you were, I was somebody that was so above my head when I did it at the time that I'm not even sure I grasped what I grasped, but it was so long ago. I don't really recall. But I think people might, you know, pick up on it in different rates, right? But so I don't necessarily know if a student pilot can really benefit and really absorb, but a private pilot I think really can. And I think before, you know, your check ride, getting an hour of spin training is huge. It's certainly what our school, you know, made sure of at some point. Like I said, it was pre-solo. And then I think we ended up changing it to pre-private. But yeah, the FAA is just like one of those things. It's just talked about. And it's like, yeah, I guess people just get spins and get it done. It's this thing that kind of happens outside. It's almost an out-of-body experience for the FAA with regard to spins, because obviously you need an endorsement to become a CFI. It just gets done. But there's no regulation on who conducts these and how it's conducted and how long. All you got to do is satisfy the endorsement, right? And to the letter of the law, you can satisfy the letter of the endorsement and not really hit home the importance of what you're teaching this new budding fledgling CFI candidate, right? 1 hour block flight is not, it's not an hour of spins. You know, maybe that's 30 minutes. So how many spins is that? You know, maybe you can knock out five. It's not very much. Maybe get 6-7 spins in there. Depends on the airplane. Just not a great snapshot to see things over a span, right? You know, imagine practicing something only a few times and then being like, you're an expert. Just, it's not how we fly as aerobatic pilots. It's not how we fly as professional pilots. I've been bidding reserve to not fly. It's been great because I've been home, getting to spend time with the kids, and our lives are really, really busy right now, which I feel like I need to go to work to take a break. Does anybody else relate to that at all? I need to go to work to relax. Have kids, guys. Do it, please. I love them, but it just takes away. It takes away from a lot of all of this stuff. But oh my gosh. Oh yeah. So I haven't flown. I haven't flown for work since February, and it's April 10th. There could be a high chance that I don't fly for 2 months. That's crazy. That's insane. So am I current? Yeah. Am I proficient? I'm losing it, right? Is that where I want to be? You know, do I want to hop in that airplane and really have get into the crap real quick? You know, stormy weather, bad weather, performance issue, short runway, high, hot, and heavy, all that good stuff. Emergency. You know, I just haven't touched an airplane in a while, so it's not how I like to fly. I like to repeat, and I like to stay current on all this stuff, because if I don't use it, I lose it. Part of the process of becoming a DPE, like I said, is this proficiency check, proficiency flight. I did the oral. I got to do the flight portion. We had to scrub it due to weather, but, the big part was learning how to fly a 172 again, or at least shaking off the rust of flying a 172 again. I hadn't flown a 172. I have to do my proficiency flight in one. So I had to like find a school, get a checkout. And I hadn't flown a 172 since 2016, and it came back. It's fine, but I was not proficient in that airplane. I wasn't current in it either, but I wasn't, you know, proficient at all. So it just takes time to kind of figure it out again. It comes back to you. You remember it, but is it as smooth or as, you know, graceful or as precise as, you know, when I was flying it twice a day, 5 days a week? No. And that's kind of where I look at with spins is, you know, people really look at this thing that is dangerous and can kill you. And most pilots don't know it's coming, right? We teach stall prevention. We teach spin recovery. But the recognition is not as high a focus as it should be. And the FAA just is just like, it just happens. You know, people get spins endorsed and good to go. It's a fascinating lack of oversight for such a high stakes form of instruction, in my opinion. But it's interesting. What else is going on? Let's see here. Annual is done on the extra. Actually, Philippe is down in Borrego with it right now. So hopefully you don't break it. Or just ball it up. Don't lightly break it, Philippe, if you hear this. Break the shit out of it so we can, you know, we'll just get the insurance in. We'll go buy an integral R with it. No, don't break it, please. Love that airplane. Annual was painless. I can't remember if we talked about that last time on the podcast. This is what happens when you don't record for a month, is you forget. Yeah, it was pretty painless. Just a few little things found, which is nice. always nice. It's been fun flying that again, but I gotta get back into wanting to fly it again. Life is just real busy. Adding the DPE stuff too is just kind of, it's just a different wrench, right? It's just a different wrench because it adds to my already high workload and it takes away from something else fun, which it is what it is. But yeah, what's coming up? Let's see here. I got a couple things. I talked to a couple people today. One person in particular who I really, 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 really hope gets back to me with a time to do an interview. And you guys are going to freaking love it. 100%. That will be one of the best ones that we've done so far. We've had some great ones. This is going to be a legend. We're talking about Mount Rushmore, okay? What else? Oh, let's talk about this. Joey Bowflex. Love you, Joey, by the way. So, let's see here. I'm going to pull up his Facebook. By the way, he and Kevin are down. Kevin Walker are down in Borrego. So, two GB1s competing. Very cool. Love to see that. Let's see here. I want to read his post. It was really funny. Let's see here. He is like Mr. Gamebird, right? But he made a comment. I think there was an article. Might have been in Planet Pilot. But I want to read what he said. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, it was Planet Pilot. It was a great article. But his post was, the only FAA certified, fully capable plus 10 minus 10 G aerobatic airplane, period. Right? So that's the sentence. The only FAA certified, fully capable plus 10 minus 10 G aerobatic airplane. I think what he, you know, in terms of just proper sentenceology, right? proper sentence structure. He meant to include 81 gallons of fuel, 25 gallon Acker tank, right? And a carbon monocoque, which is not mentioned in his statement. And so I made a comment. My comment to him was, the only FAA certified plus 10 minus 10. Don't know about that. Which is true, right? You know, Extra did it in the 90s, and has done it ever since. So that statement is patently false. But I think he meant carbon monocoque. But it's all love. I hope he does well in Borrego and love to see the game birds, competing. You know, hope he does well. I'd love to see some video of it too. But yeah, looking back, you know, there's only a handful, right, of plus 10, minus 10 certified by the FAA, aerobatic airplanes. You know, it's really Extra and Gamebird. Am I missing something in there? I don't think so. Again, we're talking certified. You know, you have the 300, 300L, and then all the way up, right? With the midwing being certified in the mid-90s. 95 or 96, 94. Granted, now this is kind of going back to what I was saying about the Integral R, where you have, you know, the technology of Gamebird GB1 versus a midwing 300. It's like, you know, midwing 300 is a Model T compared to a GB1, right? In terms of materials and build technology and things like that. So now you have these airplanes, you know, it's like my airplane has a 9.2 gallon header tank, 10.2 gallon header tank, you know, 20 gallons a side in each wing. So small header tank. Can't fly acro legally with any fuel in the wings. Cruises at 180 knots, 25 squared. These airplanes, you know, the NG and the GB1, carbon monocoque, certified plus 10, minus 10. Huge acro tanks. I think both have 25 gallon. The Why do I feel like the NG has a 20 gallon? But they're both high. Both more than enough for an hour flight. For kind of the dual training environment, which is nice. But you know, and they cruise faster too, right? I mean, the GB1 is fast. That's a lot of gas and it's fast. It's got more range than I'd ever want to be sitting in that thing before I'd have to pee or my back would hurt. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, I legitimately don't know. I'm curious to find out. I'm sure I could read it on the website, but I'm not sure what the integral R is. I don't know if it's a carbon monocoque design or not. But really for aerobatic airplanes in the United States, Gamebird GB1 and Extra NG are the only two place certified carbon monocoque aerobatic airplanes. And they have been, right, for a long time. I mean, we're going to come up on the 10-year anniversary here before you know it, guys. God, when was it certified? When was the Gamebird GB1 certified? Let's see. When was the Gamebird GB1 certified? 2017, guys. Oh, my God. We are coming up on the 10-year. Wow. Getting old. It's amazing. And obviously now they have the GB2, which is a completely different airplane and not an aerobatic airplane. But what's going to be the next quantum leap for aerobatic airplanes? The Integral R is not a quantum leap in anything, aerobatic-wise, airplane-wise. It's just a great airplane, I think. And I think it's in a good market space, right? But what's the next, you know, what's going to be the next thing designed into an aerobatic airplane for, you know, we have the SX, and those are trickling out in, you know, Bob Freeman has one. I'm blanking on his name, in Florida has one. I think there might be somebody trying to sell their MXS to buy one. That may have been posting their MXS recently on Aerobatic Pilots for sale. I think maybe he might be trying to get one. I don't know. Maybe. And I'm curious to see kind of... that airplane's not a quantum leap by any stretch. No offense to any, you know, to anybody. But it's a refresh, right? It's a year, new year refresh. Some enhancements. But, you know, like, I wonder how many SC owners really, truly want one, you know, or think they need one, or fly one saying, oh, this is a big step or a big jump. You know, I think it's more of just like, okay, you don't have an SC, you're in the market, you're going to buy the SX. That would be my opinion. But what's going to be the next quantum leap in aerobatics? It's going to be aerodynamics. It's going to be engine. Are we there? It's going to be controls. Are we going to get back to, you know, control surface deflection and crazy, you know, 3D, 4D type of aerobatic, you know, are we going to get to a, you know, I don't know. What are we going to get to? I don't, you know, Rob Holland's control surfaces can't deflect much more. You know, what's going to be the thing? I'm curious. You know, would 400 horsepower, would 500 horsepower be a big jump? Aerodynamic mods and weight yield better performance results than horsepower. Horsepower, in fact, is like, I won't say it's like the laziest, but it's the least productive way to make performance when you're talking almost anything, but especially in aviation, horsepower is the most expensive way to make speed or performance. Aerodynamics and weight yield better results. So are we going to see lighter airplanes? Are we going to see better? Are they going to be able to build something stronger and lighter? I mean, it's pretty light now. I don't know. All right. I think I've talked enough. Coming up. Things coming up Anything exciting coming up? Oh, you know what I want to get back on is Paulo to talk about the AcroWorks contest. I think that was pretty well attended. The results were posted. And I think overall it was a pretty good success. At least it looked like it from my end. So, Paulo, congrats. That's super cool. I still got to buy one. That's another thing. I gotta add it to the list. Too many things. Not enough time. Too many things, not enough time. What else? I don't know. I think that's it, guys. Thank you to Lyft Aviation for supporting the podcast. Go support them. Go buy some stuff, guys. Please. Pretty please. With sugar on top. Go buy some shoes. Go buy a kneeboard. Go buy a flight cap for that spare headset. Or maybe you don't want a helmet. Put it on your current headset. Go buy a helmet. The more I use the AV 2.1, the more I really, really love it. Such a different... It's a completely different helmet than the 1.1 and 1.2. It really, really is. Both are great. They are completely different styles of helmets. And I'm sure, you know, if you go to Sun and Fun, or if you went to Sun and Fun, but if you go to Oshkosh or you go to some of these other events and you try both on, you're going to see kind of what you like, right? But I think the 2.1 is just fantastically suited for aerobatics and lighter weight, lighter mass, better on the head, better on the neck. I've been really enjoying it, but it's definitely a different feel. It is different. But try them both on. Slap that card down. Make a purchase for sure. Use the promo code FlyCoolShit at checkout for 25% off most items on the website. We are going to be, we're kind of working on some stuff. FlyCoolShit and Lyft are working on some things coming up. So stay tuned for that. Thank you to FlyGood Merch. I'm wearing my FlyGood Don't Suck hoodie right now. Sweat my ass off in the car because I had to roll the windows up to block the noise out. It was just breezy enough this evening to need it, and now I'm hot, and I'm dying. That's why I want to end the podcast. But I freaking love this hoodie, man. Love this hoodie. FlyGoodMerch.com. Use the promo code ACRO, A-K-R-O, at checkout for 10% off the entire website. Go to FlyCoolShit.com/merch. Buy a shirt. Buy 10 shirts. Buy a whole bunch of shirts. Donate to the podcast. Helps, post-production, helps hosting, keeps the lights on, and we really, really, really appreciate it. And we will talk to y'all next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Fly Cool Shit. Be sure to check out our website at www.flycoolshit.com. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes and Spotify. Any questions, comments, or feedback, shoot us an email at flycoolshit@gmail.com.